Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's teachings to Vasudev, text number 43. Yep, 43. Sri Narada Uvacha. Karman Bhagavatam Itam. Srutvatha Mitileshvaraha. Jayante yam munin pritaha. Sopadhyayo hiyapo jayat. Sri Narada Uvacha. Narada Muni said, Dharman Bhagavatam. The science of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Itam. In this manner. Shrutva. Having heard. Atha. Then. Mithila. Ishvaraha. Master of the kingdom of Mithila. King Nimi. Jayanteyan. To the sons of Jayanti. Munin. Sages. Pritaha. Being satisfied. Sa upadhyayaha. Along with the priests. He indeed. Apujayat. He offered worship. Narada Muni said, having thus heard the science of devotional service, Nimi, the king of Mithila, felt extremely satisfied and, along with the sacrificial priests, offered respectful worship to the sagacious sons of Jayanti. Purport. The word Jayanteyan indicates the nine Yogendras who were born from the womb of Jayanti, the wife of Rishabhdev. Taton tarada dhire siddha savalokasya pasyataha raja dharman upatishtan avapaparamam gatim. The perfect sages then disappeared before the eyes of everyone present. King Nimi faithfully practiced the principles of spiritual life he had learned from them, and thus he achieved the supreme goal of life. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Vena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Mahiyam Tadati Svapadam Tikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Girim Yatkripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. The advantage of association with devotees. Never to be underestimated. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido. Bhavanti Hrit. What is it? Bhavanti Hrit. Karana Rasayanam Kata. By associating with the devotees, one is able to hear the Krishna Kata. And as it's mentioned here in this verse, King Nimi, or his name is referred to in this verse, Mithileshvaraha, which means literally the controller of Mithila, which is the name of his kingdom, right? Ishvara Mithila. So he's the controller of the kingdom of Mithila. But he's described as being Pritaha, which means very satisfied, very happy to have had the association of the nine Yogendras, the Nava Yogendras. And through the succession, you know, through these chapters, Narada Muni has described to Vasudeva the conversations held between Maharaj Nimi and the Nava Yogendras, and the different questions that Maharaj Nimi put to each of the different sages, and how in four chapters basically, the whole range of devotional service and the whole explanation of the incarnations of the Lord, the practice of devotional service, the performance of yoga, how one can come to the stage of perfection, all of these things have been described by the Nava Yogendras. And so as a consequence then, King Nimi is totally satisfied. He has heard the principles of Dharma, as mentioned here. Dharman Bhagavatam Ittam. In this manner, he has heard the science of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Interesting thing it's mentioned. It mentions here, Prabhupada has mentioned the science of devotional service, but there's an interesting commentary in Siddhapati's blog at the moment about warning the devotees to be careful about using this terminology, especially among scientists. Because, strictly speaking, if we are to use the terminology of the scientists to describe devotional service, then, and as Siddhapati warns, because he tried to argue that devotional service was a science with some scientifically minded people, and basically he says they'll shred you if you get in an argument with them, because according to the definition of science, devotional service is not a scientific process because it can't be proved. Right? The principle of science is that you have to be able to prove something. And being able to prove that somebody is self-realized or not, there's no test. There's no scientific test in order to do that. Of course, the way in which Srila Prabhupada explains the science of devotional service is that, basically, very simple explanation, and why he says it's scientific, is that, you know, if you perform an experiment in the laboratory, then you take chemical A and chemical B and you combine it in certain quantities at a certain temperature for a certain amount of time, and then at the end you'll get the same result. Right? Just like, you know, if you're baking a cake. If you get all of the ingredients and put them all together and combine them in the correct way and then put them in the oven and turn the oven on at the right heat for the correct amount of time, then at the end, what will you get? A cake. Hopefully. assuming that the electricity will stay on. Actually, you know, when I was in Noida, I noticed that Shakti Manta had the bread making machine stuck away in a cupboard. And you know, I happen to be more partial to toast than I am to paratas for some strange reason. And so I sort of said, how come the bread machine's in the cupboard? Do you ever make bread? And she said, the only reason why they can't make bread is because there's load shedding every few hours, and so every time she turns the bread making machine on, it gets halfway through the cycle, and then the electricity cuts out, and then that's it, no more bread. So, you know, we might have power failure once every, you know, decade, and we think, oh no, this is the end of the world. Especially on a day when it's, you know, 43 degrees. But actually, you know, we have it fairly easy. We have although we do get some idea of what it might be like to be in the hellish planets on days like this. You know, where there's a description of how you put on a hot plate and then basically cooked. So when you walk outside, then you get the experience. So anyway, that's how Prabhupada would explain scientific. That's what he would mean, scientific process of devotional service. But it's an interesting warning that Siddhapati gives us, is that, you know, in amongst scientists who are fervently attached to the scientific process, which is a particular discipline in modern so-called academia, then Krishna consciousness is not a science. And he says what happens is, if you argue that it is a science, then what they will do is say it's a pseudo-science. And he makes the point that if you're having to argue with somebody on that level, then you'll be in grave trouble. So best not to go there. But we have a very simple definition. Our definition of scientific means you apply the process and it will work. Although there's no way to prove that somebody is actually Krishna conscious. The experiment really is done on oneself. And the test is, we have a very simple test. It may not be very scientific, but it's adequate for us. The test is, as is demonstrated here by Maharaj Nimi, he is pitaha, satisfied, happy, completely happy in his Krishna consciousness. This is why, even though our activities may not be very scientific, if somebody tries to dissuade us from it, we don't care too much. We don't care for their arguments and for their science, if you like. Because we know by practicing Krishna consciousness, one becomes basically happy. Susukam kartum avyayam. Right? Simple. It's a simple definition. And if one... And we see it here in the case of Maharaj Nimi. He attained perfection by the association of these great saintly persons, the Navayogendras. You know, we can see that they're very exalted personalities because they manifest at a certain point, but then when their presentation of Krishna consciousness was finished, then they disappeared. They're siddhas. Again, very difficult to verify, right? Very difficult to verify. In fact, some might say, "Woo, this is mythology." Right? Who ever heard of somebody just appearing out of the sky and then disappearing again? Who ever heard of such a thing? Right? We haven't seen it. We can't test it, so therefore it hasn't happened. This is the materialistic mentality. But the devotees don't worry too much about these details, because if they're siddha, or perfect, and they have siddhis, mystic powers and potencies, then certainly they can perform all manner of activities that are not ordinarily in the mundane experience of men. But rather, as we say, the proof is in the pudding. This is our test. Our scientific test is the proof is in the pudding. We hear from saintly persons and we follow their instructions. We take their advice. This is based on Shraddha. Really, what we see in Maharaj Nimi, in Narada Muni, especially in Vasudev, we see a high degree of Shraddha, or faith. And as a result of their faith in the process of devotional service, our faith in the association of the devotees first. This is the most important. Adol Shraddha. In the beginning, there has to be some appreciation and consideration of the benefit of the association of the devotees. This is the beginning of devotional service. We like to have the association of the devotees. And why do we like to have the association of devotees? We like to have the association of the devotees because they talk about Krishna. Right? And in talking about Krishna, one becomes purified as a result. Srimatam sva kata krishna punya shravana kirtana vrijyanta stohya badrani vidhunoti surit satam. So for the satam, or the satvatas, the devotees, those who are attached to the permanent manifestation of the spiritual form or the spiritual feature or the spiritual world, as opposed to the asat, the material realm, they like to have the association of the devotees. Why? Because of this opportunity to remove the unwanted things, yabhadrani, and cultivate the positive practice of devotional service. Even just by a small amount of association, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, sadhu-sangha, sava-sastra-koi, labha-matra, sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddhi-hoi. So even just a little bit of association with the devotees, here comes the enemy, with reinforcements. He's exiting himself. He's got kirtan as a backup. So, actually, the devotees are not that concerned about the scientific process. Really, we're not. It's just an interesting point that Siddha Prati brought this up, because he obviously, at work, he's been preaching to people, and he said, "Oh, this is the science of Krishna consciousness." They said, "This is not a science. This is a pseudoscience," which means, it's a more competition. Which means basically something that's not scientific masquerading as a science. So we want to be careful of that. And we should know what devotional service is, actually. The reason we present it as being scientific is because it is consistent to its own principles. The activity of devotional service and all of the practices involved with the process of devotional service, they all form a cohesive whole. And it has its results. And we know that. We experience those results. Hey, Haribol! Look at that, an audience. I'm not even sure whether he's aware of the fact that there is an audience. But this is the real advantage of the association of the devotees. And as one devotee, I've mentioned this before, but it's an interesting comment, even if the devotees have faults, even if there are discrepancies in the behaviour of the devotees, they're better than materialists. Because the materialists will never talk about Krishna. But even the most faulty devotee will talk about Krishna. Of course, we have to be careful about our association. The quality of association helps us to also then build our faith. And so therefore, we try to find, as much as possible, the right kind of devotee association so that we get to hear the Krishna Katha at a very pure level, where the motivation is to serve Krishna out of a proper understanding of who we are and who Krishna is. And that the real purpose of life is not to worship Krishna simply to get some material benefits or to get a big position or to make money or whatever. As it mentions later on, some of these purports. People go to church or go to worship God so that they can get something for themselves. This is a theme in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada mentions this early on in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. But actually the real purpose of serving Krishna is to re-establish our relationship with him. This is the real Taraman Bhagavatam Itam. This is the real purpose of understanding the science of self-realization, is to come to a realization of ourselves as we really are, and as we can be in a fully satisfied state of existence. What's that verse? In the first canto of the Bhagavatam, fifth chapter, maybe. My memory fails me. No, you're guessing. No, it's how one can become fully satisfied by engaging in devotional service. Anyway. I already mentioned that verse. Anyway, it'll come to me. So this is our test, if you like. We don't need a scientific test to tell us that we're happy. Right? We engage in devotional service and become fully satisfied. Can somebody grab me the first canto of the Bhagavatam? That's the easiest way to find it, is to look it up. It's a series of it's in that series of verses. Yes, have I put some parol dharmo? Here it is, text 6 of chapter 2. Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo. The supreme occupation, right, Dharma, the supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service under the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. And that's the science, if you like. The science of devotional service is to cultivate this unmotivated, in other words, pure devotional service, free from personal considerations for the cultivation of knowledge or for the acquirement of some material possessions. We want to become fully satisfied, pittaha, then this is the process. And that process is revealed, as is demonstrated in this pastime, that process is revealed by saintly persons, by saintly devotees. And it's being demonstrated in more than one way, as the Bhagavatam does. It's initiated because Vasudeva is feeling unhappy. He's feeling unsatisfied. Actually, he's manifesting his natural humility. It's one of the qualities of a devotee. The devotee thinks of himself, I'm not a devotee. Everybody else is a better devotee than me. That's a symptom of a uttama adhikari. Kanishtha adhikari thinks, I'm the best devotee and there's no other devotee better than me. And a uttama adhikari thinks, I am the worst devotee and there is no other devotee that's worse than me. You know, there's the story of Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. You've probably all heard that story. Yudhishthira was asked to find somebody who was more fallen than him. Is that right? Is that how the story goes? And Duryodhana was asked to find somebody who was better than him. And neither of them could find anybody. So there's a natural humility of a devotee like Yudhishthira. And so Vasudeva is inquiring from Narada Muni, you know, I'm in the material world because I had a desire to have a son. Of course, his desire to have a son was actually a pure desire because it was a desire to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's odd. I must have pressed a button on my phone. So even though Vasudeva was presenting himself as a very fallen devotee, actually he's not a fallen devotee at all, but still that's how he's presenting himself. That then gives Narada Muni an opportunity to present this whole story of Maharaj Nimi and the Navayogendras. Of course, Maharaj Nimi, when he meets the Yogendras, then also he's feeling, here I am, a king, I'm in a very fallen situation, please enlighten me. And then we get the whole presentation of the process of devotional service. And at the end, Maharaj Nimi is fully satisfied, fully satiated. That's the result of association with the devotees. It's also the result of the performance of pure devotional service, is that one becomes fully satisfied, fully happy. Actually, one who engages in devotional service is so attractive that even Krishna is attracted to such a devotee. So this is the real benefit of associating with the devotees, is getting an opportunity to cultivate devotional service with an eye for pleasing Krishna, free from any personal consideration. And that learning, or that a proper understanding of that science, if you like, is done in the association of the devotees. It can never be done in the association of materialistic persons. They're not interested in such a thing. As is explained in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, their topics are about, you know, what's the weather like, who won the football. No, at the moment, actually, in Melbourne, it's what's the weather like? Who's winning the tennis? Right? Or when's the power going to come back on? Actually, it was a real shock for everybody last night. The television wasn't working. They couldn't be on the internet. They actually had to sit down and talk to their friends. Well, we even saw some people sitting outside their house on the median strip underneath the tree, you know, keeping cool, and they were actually reading a book, which I thought was pretty amazing. But anyway, the association of and that's why actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you know, the first activity of a devotee is asat sanga tyag. That is, one should give up the association of those who are attached to the asat or the impermanent. Because that kind of association is not conducive to discussions of topics about dharma or, you know, devotional service. And so therefore the devotees are recommended to give up that asat sangha and to take the association of the devotees, because in the association of the devotees then one can develop this, cultivate pure devotional service. Anyabhila sita shunyam karma jnana jnana karma anuvritam, isn't it? Not covered by a desire for some personal benefit or for some impersonal speculation. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. This is the topmost level of devotional service. And that's what's being encouraged here by the Navayogendras. And being appreciated by Maharaj Nimi. So much so that by that association, he was able to perfect his life. And anybody who follows in the footsteps of devotees like Maharaj Nimi and follows in the footsteps of devotees like Vasudeva, then they'll also become perfect. And that's our test. We see that in the good qualities, in the good character of the devotees. We see the effectiveness, the benefits of engaging in devotional service. So they heard from Nimi, Maharaj Nimi, and his priests and the people in his sangha, his associate, his court, if you like. They heard from the Navayogendras. They were extremely satisfied by hearing from them, and then out of respect they then worshipped the Navayogendras, which is why we have, you know, Guru Puja, and you know, we welcome the sannyasis and other elevated devotees, give them a garland, seat, nice prasadam, so we can hear from them and be enlightened in the process of devotional service. And then after having been worshipped by the devotees, then what happened? They disappeared. They left. Presumably to keep preaching the message in another location. That's the duty of the Parivrajik Acharya. Right? They go from place to place teaching people how to engage in the process of devotional service and how to become pure devotees. Right, so I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments? Fairly simple principles being explained here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Oops. Yes, Kevin. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's a good reason why we have to be very careful, because It's interesting, Prabhupada actually wanted the devotees to preach to the scientific community as such, right? He wanted them to do it. But it has to be done in a very sophisticated and well, shall we say sophisticated, it has to be done in a very careful and deliberate way, so as to avoid falling into the various traps that might exist when you're dealing with people who are not actually devotionally inclined. And even it's recommended that we, you know, the ninth offence, isn't it? The ninth offence in chanting Hare Krishna is to preach to the faithless, isn't it? Ninth offence? Yeah. So it's a fact, yes, you're right. There are people who we really shouldn't just... I remember once when I first joined the temple, I might have been here for a week, and you know, there's a guy doing the delivery of, you know, maybe the vegetables or the bogur or something. And so I just started preaching to him straight away, and one of the devotees got on my case. He said, "What are you doing? You know, this guy's not interested in Krishna consciousness." Because I couldn't tell. As far as I was concerned, everybody was fair game. And in one sense, that's an art in and of itself, is developing the ability to discriminate between who we can actually present and how we should present Krishna consciousness to. And it's interesting, Prabhupada actually encouraged the devotees not to spend too much time with people, but just to give them a book, especially if they weren't familiar with them, just give them a book, right? And we do need to be sufficiently attuned to the mentality and to the nature of a person before we give them, what should we say, intimate instructions or detailed instructions about the process of devotional service if they're not at all devotionally inclined. So therefore we have to be careful about, you know, when we do present Krishna consciousness, we do need to be mindful of the mentality and the mood and the level of inquiry of the person that we're speaking to. And if a person has a challenging mentality, then generally we'll avoid them. Or if they're faithless, then we avoid them. Yes?
Our lifestyle is such that we hear the science, so it comes down to a specific succession, whereupon the materialist, their science is not a specific succession, it comes from an ascending process of speculation and theories. So their definition of the science and our definition of the science is...
very different. Yes, that's right. I think that's the point that Siddhapati is making in his presentation. Not that we don't present Krishna consciousness as a science, but we have to understand what our meaning is when we say it's scientific. Very different to that of the so-called scientists who have a methodology and a system for determining whether something is scientific or not. And that is based on proof. But there's no test, you know, there's no test to deter, there's no, you know, there's no piece of litmus paper that we could put on somebody's tongue and say, yes, he's Krishna conscious. But actually there is. That's mentioned by Krishna in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, you know, how does he walk, how does he talk, how does he sit, how does he present himself? So we can actually tell. It's not unscientific in one sense. And we use that term science in the sense that, you know, it is a process and it actually does work and there are symptoms. Anything else?
Because mind is about mind and mind cannot be seen. and for Dandasinta.
There's all sorts of contradictions out there, don't worry. Yes. No, but I think you'll find that even in psychiatry they have tests,
yes.
Right? And then they're able to measure the results. So they're empirically observable. And so from their construct, that means it's scientific. Right? Otherwise, if it wasn't, then they'd be thrown out of their community. And, you know, you're asking me, who's absolutely not a scientist. So I'm not going to defend the psychiatrist, but that's what they, I'm sure. I think Siddhapati's warning is don't get into this. He's basically saying don't get into this argument with people because you'll be embarrassed. That's basically what he's saying. He's basically saying, I got into this argument with some scientists and they embarrassed me. That's what he's saying. And I say that's a good warning for the rest of us. You know, don't get into a fight that you're going to lose because they'll undercut you with their own construct of things. Right? And of course, and that really highlights what the point that Jnana's making is, as I understand it, what Jnana's making is there's some people we have to be very careful with. Yeah. Yes. 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 That is the science. That's the highest science, as is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The science of the soul is considered to be the highest. But they'll object to us using even that term. Because even Prabhupada admits this point, you cannot scientifically prove the existence of the soul. There's no test. There's no empirical test. You know, like I say, there's no litmus paper that you just go bonk, put it on and it goes beep, 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 and then you see. And so therefore, that was my point, it's based on faith. And as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, pratyaksavagamandhamyam, direct perception. We identify ourselves as being separate from this body. When we realise who we are, then we realise, I'm not this body. This body is just a vehicle for the soul. But, you know, there's no test. You can get your microscopes out, x-rays, you know, lasers, whatever. Try to find the soul. You cannot. You can't. So we admit that. We have no problem with it, in fact. But that doesn't mean that the soul doesn't exist and that you can't have direct perception of it through self-realisation. And that's what each one of us experiences. At some point in time we experience that as a fact. So that's why we don't need somebody to convince us of it. Because it's our personal experience. Anything else? Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.